Hello, Pacer Nation. It's time for the 2013-2014 Pacer season. And what better way to get set for the season than listening to the podcast about the Indiana Pacers, Pacer Nation.
You're listening to Pacer Nation, the podcast for the fans of the Indiana Pacers.
Today is Saturday, November 2nd, from the heart of Pacer Nation in Indianapolis. This is our first official show, and we are excited to have you along for the ride. I'm your host, JP Sinclair, and I'm joined by the one doctor I do not get my medical advice from, Doc Fred. Marcus Redwell, hello, sir.
Hey, JP, how's it going? Glad to be here.
Well, let's get right into it. I don't know about you, Marcus, but the Pacers are 2-0 already on this season. It's still early, but you have to like the way that they've come out and played the last two games. Winning a very gritty battle against New Orleans and taking care of the Magic like they should have in their first game.
Well, yeah, that's right, JP. And, you know, they did it, in, as you said, in different fashions. They came out against first game. They came out and they got the big win. They came from behind a little bit. They fought. They battled. And they ended up coming out with a big win, winning by 10 points. And I don't think it was as close as the score said.
Yeah, and that Magic game, you know, it was a 10-point victory. A great homecoming for Victor Oladipo. The fans were into it for him, which was great to see. But, you know, the Pacers played the way they should have, and it was a block party all night long.
Right. Roy Hibbert came out with those the 7 blocks in I believe the first half, and he had, you know, came out with 15 rebounds early in the third quarter, and just really set the tone for the Pacers on the inside. And Paul George came up huge in that game as well, knocking down a couple of big shots, including that one at the end of the third quarter that really kind of paved the way for the Pacers to take control of the fourth quarter. But you're right, Victor Oladipo, coming back to Indiana, had a nice little homecoming, took the ball inside, got rejected a couple times, but he kept bringing it back, and that's one of the things that I like to see from Victor, as I'm a huge IU fan, and that was nice to see.
I thought, if you were, you know, no one expected Victor Oladipo to be the number 2 pick in the draft this year. He's obviously worked very hard to get where he is. So obviously great credit to him. I think the Magic were very smart in taking him number 2 overall. You know, just like the Cavaliers, who the team plays tonight, you know, they picked Bennett as their number 1 pick, and that was a surprise pick for everybody. But it's sometimes about picking who you think fits into your system, and I think Oladipo is a great fit. He plays so savvy and smart like a veteran player should. And he's only a rookie.
Right, and he's a defensive-minded guy, which is really what you need in this level of play in the NBA. He led the NCAA in what IU calls deflections, tip passes, last year. He gets a lot of steals. He does a lot of work on both ends of the floor, and he's really brought his shot a long way, as his first shot of his career was a made three-pointer from the top of the key.
Well, we'll take a closer look at that Magic game as well as the Pelicans game the other night from the Pacers. But first, we're going to take a look at the news.
Come on, why don't you take a look around? You know what's about to happen, what they're up against.
What is going on here?
I look around this room, and I see potential.
Michael Carter Williams had 22 points, 12 assists, and set an NBA first game record with 9 steals for the Sixers in their opening win against the dreadnought known as the Heat. Marcus, I thought the Sixers were supposed to be trying to tank this year.
Well, and they got that Michael Carter Williams, midway through the first round, the top 10, but he's known for his ability on the defensive end. He's got those really long arms. He's a 6'4" point guard, and he really does a good job. As you saw, 22 points and 12 assists. That's a pretty good stat line for Chris Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it was a dang near quadruple-double, and this kid's a rookie. But while the Sixers are 2-0, I don't think anyone expects them to be there at the end of the year. They're probably going to be in for that number 1 overall pick next year.
Yeah, they got a good shot of that. They don't have much on the inside. They had Bynum. He's always hurt, so you never know with him. But the Sixers, you're right. They're probably going to end up at the end of the pack. And the Heat, who have started off with an average start, may end up at the top of the pack, as they have the last 2 years, winning the championship. So you really got to watch out for them.
While also making national headlines all week long, the Clippers under new head coach Doc Rivers are covering up Lakers banners during Clippers home games. Some people disagree with it, Marcus. I personally don't. I mean, I think it's a great thing to try and change a mindset to a team that's known for losing, and I think it's just ingenious by Rivers. He's trying to set new precedents for this team this year.
Yeah, and that's right. The Clippers have really been in that Lakers shadow, you know, JP, as you talked about, their entire existence. They've never no championships. They're a very good candidate most years for the number one overall pick, as you said. They got Blake Griffin a few years ago. Even further back than that, they got Eric Gordon in the top 10. And it's some good players, but they can't ever quite keep that cohesiveness around there, and that's a good move by them, bringing in Doc Rivers, who is seeming to kind of make new history for the Clippers and new side of the LA scheme.
Yeah, and I think the Clippers can be there at the top of the West at the end of this year, obviously. I think they'll be in the top two or three teams coming out of the West. I mean, Doc Rivers brings that, you know, that mindset to this team, and he's trying to change that, like I said, that losing culture. I remember reading Tony Dungy's book Once Upon a Time, and it was all about how when he was in Tampa, you know, that was a team that was historically bad, and they had to change the mindset of a franchise that was so used to losing and being bad, and how hard that was. And I think Doc Rivers is definitely the type of coach that can do that for the Clippers.
Well, and you're right. Doc Rivers is that Tony Dungy type of coach. He wants to preach not only good players, but good people, and trying to bring that kind of a thing. He left Boston, where he won, you know, the championship, and I believe it was 2006. He brought Rajon Rondo, who out of college was, you know, a good point guard at best, and now he's possibly, you know, one of the best in the league when he's healthy. But you know, Doc Rivers is really he's changing the way that things are going to be done out there on the other side of LA.
Well, also, somebody who's definitely locally known, Gordon Hayward, and the Utah Jazz failed to reach a contract extension by the Thursday's deadline. Hayward will demand good money in free agency. I think that one is a given. But Boston seems to be a likely choice as much as any place else, at least to me. I'd like to see him in a Pacer uniform, but I don't think at the end of the season the money's going to be there for it, obviously. But at the same time, I think Boston likely choice with, you know, Brad Stevens as the head coach there. Obviously coached Hayward at Butler, knows how to get the best out of a player like that. And the Boston Celtics will have the money to give him. But he's going to demand good money on the free agency market.
Well, you're right. And Gordon's he's come a long way since his rookie year. He was timid. He wasn't as aggressive. Wasn't great on the defensive end of the floor. And now he's changed. He's getting better at defense. He's really taking the ball to the basket, demanding the basketball over there in Utah. And JP, I may have mentioned this to you before, but Gordon is the longest tenured player in Utah right now. You know, he came in the league the same year as Derek Favors, who is, you know, Derek Favors is still on the roster, but Gordon really kind of is setting the tone, I guess you could say, for the Utah Jazz right now, and they need to put up or shut up, as they say, and looks like they shut up, so Gordon's going to get some good looks this offseason.
Now, he will be a restricted free agent, meaning the Jazz will be able to match any offer. If you remember, same situation happened a year or two ago with Roy Hibbert. We gave him the big contract because Portland offered him the big contract when he was a restricted free agent. So the Utah Jazz will be able to match any signing offer. But, you know, I would love to see him, you know, there or, you know, in Boston or possibly here with us. But like I said, I don't see the numbers matching up. But he's definitely a hometown hero, definitely a hometown kid. You know, you yourself went to Brownsburg High School. You know, him in that area a lot better than I do. But he's going to be, I don't think he'll ever reach that star potential. He was taken, you know, I look back at that draft. It was really interesting because Gordon Hayward was right there. And then we took Paul George right after the Jazz took Gordon Hayward. So I think everybody in Indy was hoping that Gordon Hayward would drop down one more pick and we'd get him. But instead we get Paul George. I don't think anyone looks back and wishes that they had Gordon Hayward over Paul George.
Right. It's kind of that Steve Alford, Reggie Miller situation you got going on there. Pacers could have taken Steve Alford, who bowed out quickly, and now he's a coach. Instead, we got Reggie Miller, and he's, you know, the greatest Pacer of all time. So stuff like that tends to work out for the best when Indiana does it. Worked out with Peyton Manning, worked out with Edgerrin James, and it seems to be working out with Andrew Luck on the football side as well. But Gordon's a good kid, and whatever happens to him, it's going to be good because he deserves good stuff to come to him.
Okay, well, let's take a look at the week in review for the Pacers. Well, Marcus, it was a pretty good week for the Pacers as they go 2-0 at the start of the season through two games so far, one against the Hornets, as we talked about, and the other against the Magic. They played the Magic and won in that 97-87 10-point victory, and it was a team where we got to see the new assertive Paul George come out scoring 24 points in that home opener.
Well, that's right, and we talked about that previously, but Paul George really last year he kind of stepped into his role as a team leader, and he's starting to do the same kind of thing this year. Early on, coming up with I believe he was 3 from 6 from behind the 3-point line in that first game. Did a real nice job of taking the ball to the hole, finding his open teammates when they were there, and facilitating the offense and on the defensive side of the floor as well for the Pacers.
He is becoming one of the better two-way players in the NBA. Everybody wants to see Paul George take that next step to be an MVP caliber player. He's not a superstar yet. He's obviously an all-star, but he's had the potential ever since he's gotten into the league. He's become better each and every single year, and this year is going to be the real opportunity. And I think a lot of what the Pacers do this season hinges on how good Paul George can be, particularly in clutch time. We started seeing that come out in the playoffs last year, and we want to see that in the regular season this year when the team's going through some bad stretches.
Well, that's right, and Paul is the kind of player, he was almost a little bit like Gordon when he came into the league, as he was a little bit timid, didn't want to take the spotlight from Danny Granger. But last year, he really stepped into that role and made it his own. And the two-way player is almost rare in the NBA. You got a couple guys like LeBron can play both ways, but you really want to see Paul step up to that level and become a LeBron-type player that can really take over a game by himself at any point in time.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of it last year. We're looking to see more of it this year, of course. Let's also take a look at Hibbert in that game, because, I mean, Hibbert was just all over the place. I mean, he was hungry, hungry Hibbert underneath the basket, if you will, just gobbling up rebound after rebound after rebound. He finished with 16, also swatted 7 in the block column, but he did get a little bit knocked around towards the end of the game, went down, had a little bit of a knee problem, he would have been able to return, but they decided to hold him out until the Pelican game.
Yeah, and every single Pacer fan took a real deep breath when they saw when they saw Roy go down right there. I know I did myself. You see him grab his knee, and as big as he is, you got guys like Greg Oden who have gone down and not gotten back up. But it was real good to see Roy get up. He kind of walked off the floor under his own power with a little bit of a limp. And, you know, Indiana faithful know that you saw Reggie Wayne do that 2 weeks ago, and I shed a tear. I don't know about you, JP, but Indiana people are very connected to their team members of their favorite team, and you really almost feel like they're a member of your family. Whenever they get hurt, you get hurt. So that was good to see Roy get back up and come back in that Pelican game.
Yeah, well, and not to get too off topic here, but Reggie going down is definitely a huge loss for the Colts. It'll be interesting seeing who they can, you know, Griff Whalen, LeVon Brazil, see if they can step up next week. But, you know, I think Hibbert has the potential to be, you know, he was an all-star a couple of years ago. Obviously, probably won't be an all-star again because they took the center position away from the all-star game, which, you know, I personally don't agree with. But that big man play is becoming so abstract, if you will, in the NBA, that it'll be interesting seeing if Hibbert can take his game to the same play that it was during the playoffs. Obviously, he had a slow start last year. This year has been so-and-so. The Pelicans game, he was in foul trouble most of the night, but you know, he looked really good against the Magic.
And he did. Underneath the basket, it was like anytime you go underneath the basket, you really are scared because Roy Hibbert's standing down there. And it seems like Roy's rubbing off on Jan Mahimi because Mahimi was doing the same thing. He was standing up there, holding his ground, getting in good defensive position, and making it tough for people to make shots. And that's what you got to do. And Roy's, you can tell he's been working in the offseason to stay out of foul trouble because he did a nice job of that in those first two games.
Well, he did get into a little bit of foul trouble during the Pelicans game, but Jan Mahimi, as you talked about, stepped in for him. Jan's been playing great, you know, defensively, getting the rebounds that he needs to get as a backup center, getting blocks. He's been very good at that. But to me, he's not the offensive player that, you know, not even close to the offensive player Roy is, obviously. But you lose something when Jan comes in. And, you know, it'll be interesting going forward because of the four players that you have there at that power forward center position that can kind of sub in, sub out in either the power forward or center position, but in Hibbert, West, Mahimi, and Scola. And then you also got Copeland, who the Pacers got in the offseason. And to me, you know, Copeland's considered a four on the depth chart behind West and Scola. But to me, if Mahimi continues to struggle, particularly offensively, where you're not getting at least something from him in the points column, it'll be interesting to see if Vogel decides to slide Scola down to the five spot in place of Mahimi and then get Copeland some minutes there at the four coming in for West.
Well, yeah, and Copeland's a guy that can really spread the floor for you. David West does the same type of thing where he's got that 18-foot jumper, but Copeland can step outside and knock down the three, not to tote him too high, but, you know, put him in that Dirk Nowitzki type of role. He's not, obviously not on Nowitzki's level, but put him in that type of role where he can put his back to the basket and turn around and make a jump shot. He can spread the floor. He might be a little bit of a liability on the defensive end, but there's work that needs to be done that can be done to make him a better player on that side of the floor. And if you put him up against the fours and the fives in practice, he's just bound to get better at that spot.
Well, you know, we also saw for the Magic, we talked about Victor Oladipo, but up-and-coming forward, Andrew Nicholson had 18 first-half points for Orlando. Very surprising, but he, for whatever reason, did not play down the stretch in the second quarter or at all in the third quarter. And, it was kind of astounding to me that head coach Jacques Vaughn is trying to, I don't know if he's trying to tank the season or what. I know that's become a standard norm that people hate to hear, but you know, why, if you have one player that scored 18 points in the first half, why is he not getting minutes in the second?
Well, and that's right. I didn't get a chance to watch all of the first half of the Pacers game, but you come in watching the game at halftime and you see Nicholson's got 18 points, and you're like, wow, well, this guy's going to kill us in the second half, and he hardly scores. I don't even know if he scored a basket in the second half, JP.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen a couple of different articles coming into this year about the teams that are trying to tank. Obviously, you got players like Wiggins coming in next year. It's supposed to be a very, you know, stocked NBA draft. And a lot of teams and GMs hate that term, tanking. But there's, you know, I was listening to Mike and Mike this week, and, you know, Greenberg was talking about how when it comes to the tanking terminology in this team, it's almost a beneficial thing for NBA GMs to build teams that are not going to be competitive and successful during the season because they're going to be rewarded with a high draft pick and you know, changes that might need to be made just because of that.
Well, and it's an interesting strategy because it doesn't necessarily pay off. As we mentioned earlier, the LA Clippers have had the first draft pick, Blake Griffin, still haven't won a championship with him. The Cleveland Cavaliers had the first draft pick in 2003, and they won zero championships with LeBron James. LeBron had to get with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh to get those championships under his belt. So it's an interesting strategy in the sense that if you are trying to get that number one pick, which isn't guaranteed if you are the worst record. You know, there's still the lottery, which nobody's very good at. I'd buy a lottery ticket every week, and I've never won once.
Well, if we had won the lottery, I'm sure our quality of podcast would be a lot better. But, you know, you look at the NBA lottery, and, you know, looking back at that LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony draft, you know, Detroit, who had just come off of winning the championship, got the number two pick. They take Darko Milicic. That didn't work out for them, obviously. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about Greg Oden. He was a number one overall pick for Portland. You know, just because you get that number one overall pick doesn't guarantee anything. I know they're calling it, you know, Wiggins the next coming of LeBron, but you can't always know that. I mean, nobody even knew if LeBron James was going to be capable of being the player that he has become.
Well, and I mean, we talked about it earlier even more. Bennett going to the Cavaliers this year. He's a good player, but I would have rather had Victor Oladipo if I'm the Cavs. You know, I think Victor Oladipo may have been the best player in the draft, may not have been. You got guys like Michael Carter-Williams that can be a great NBA player, Cody Zeller, other guys that didn't go number one overall that are still good players. Paul George went 10th, and he's probably one of the best players out of that draft class right now playing in the NBA.
Well, it'll be interesting as we go through the season, taking a look at who the bad teams are and where they'll line up for that upcoming draft. The other game that the Pacers played this week involved a thrilling second half comeback. I know you watched a lot of that game. I know I watched, you know, I watch all the Pacers games, but Paul George scored 32 points. George Hill finished with 19, including that pivotal dagger three-pointer in the final minutes, and the Pacers erased that 16-point deficit to get the 95-90 victory over the New Orleans Pelicans on Wednesday, which, by the way, I cannot stand the name the Pelicans. I mean, really, New Orleans? The Pelicans? I mean, I get it that their state bird is the Pelican, but to me, that's just a terrible name.
Yeah, JP, I was at our friend's Rookies and watching the game, and there's just everybody there's like, who are the Pelicans? Who are the Pelicans? Pacers are playing who? The Pelicans? Well, that's what is that even a team? Formerly the Hornets, but you know, and you're right, JP. It was a good game, a really good comeback. You're watching the game and you see the Pacers are down and they're not hitting shots, and you just say, well, you know, here they come in the second half. They dwindle it down a little bit more, get a couple defensive stops, and all of a sudden they're right there up by one, and George Hill stepping at the top of the key, knocking down the biggest three-pointer of the season, and sealing it for the Pacers.
Well, I mean, not you know, we talked about that Pelicans name, but in my opinion, I thought it was great the reaction that Charles Barkley had during the first TNT broadcast of the game. They were talking about the Pelicans, and he refused to say the name. But that's just Charles Barkley. But, I mean, I think they should be known as the Voldemorts because, in my opinion, they're the team that shall now not be named this season, in my opinion.
That's right, JP. And anytime Charles talks, I listen. People give him a lot of flack on the show, but Charles is one of the better basketball minds in the history of the game. He was a surefire Hall of Famer and never won a championship, but Charles was one of the greatest of all time, getting boards, knocking down shots, taking it to the basket. He could really do it all. And he's that type of player, like we mentioned earlier, that 3-4 stretch, 3-4-5 stretch player like Copeland is striving to be. I like Charles. Like I said, when Charles talks, I listen.
Well, it'll be interesting seeing how the Pelicans go this year. Obviously, the Pacers got the W against them, which is what we want. But I think they're going to be a good team. I mean, Eric Gordon, they traded for Jrue Holiday during the draft, which I thought was one of the better, you know, more surprising trades, obviously, in the draft. You know, Jrue Holiday coming off an all-star year. And then you also look at the fact that, I mean, they just, Unibrow, I always forget his name,
Davis,
thank you, Anthony Davis, Unibrow. That's just his trademark, but I think he's got the potential to be one of the best centers. And here in a couple of years, I think he'll be better than Hibbert as a center. Not to take anything away from Hibbert, obviously, but Anthony Davis has that ability, you know. And I think this is going to be a good team, and I look for them to be at least in the top, you know, probably around five in the West.
Well, you're right, and Davis can block shots. He can spread the floor, step outside, knock down a deep two, and he can take the ball to the basket, as he did a couple of times. They got him off the handoff pick and roll, and he kind of just took it to the basket and ran right past Roy Hibbert and Jan Mahimi on a couple of occasions, and as you said, got Roy Hibbert into just a tad bit of foul trouble. But Anthony Davis is going to be a good player, and I was impressed by him. And Eric Gordon as well the other night really came up big for the Pelicans.
So it'll be interesting seeing how they go this year, but adversity was all over the place in that game. I mean, at the half, the Pacers were losing the rebounding battle. They were losing that 21-15, something they've pretty much been known to dominate. Hibbert was in foul trouble, as we talked about most of the game. West did not look like himself at all going to his former team against in New Orleans. They shot only 35% in the first half and had 10 turnovers. It was definitely a horrible first half for the Pacers, but somehow they come back with a gritty second half performance and get it done.
Well, that's right, and we talked about it previously. They chipped away at the lead. They made a shot, made a stop, made a shot, gave up a shot. Made a shot, made a stop, made a shot, gave up a shot. It was a nice little transition there. They were down by 13, down by 12, down by 11. They just kind of dwindled it down a little bit at a time. And finally, they showed who the championship caliber team was in that game and got it done at the end.
Well, you know, and even Roy Hibbert talked about that after in his post-game presser, that a couple of years ago, the Pacers would have lost this game. You know, and I think this is the type of game that the Pacers are going to need to win this year to get the seeding that they want. Obviously, they want as high seeding as they possible because they want that home court advantage that worked against them in the playoffs last year against the Heat. They're obviously striving to get that this year, and I think winning these type of games is what's going to help them get to that level this year.
Well, that's right, and like Roy Hibbert had said, a couple years ago they lose this game. They mail it in when they're down by 20 points, you know, 15 points at halftime. But this year, In the last year or so, they've really started to transition into that caliber of team that can come back from those kind of deficits and really get the job done when it counts.
Well, I think that definitely bodes well for them. Going ahead in the season when it comes to that type of game, obviously, let's take a quick look at the player of the week.
That wasn't flying. Falling with style.
Well, Dak, here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence.
Paul George has been playing at a higher level than any other person on the team this week. First game against the Magic, Paul was 8 of 16 from the floor with 3-6 beyond the arc for 24 points. Also had his 6 boards, 5 assists, and a steal. He had 32 in the New Orleans victory in Wednesday, going 9-19 from the floor with 4 threes. Also included 6 rebounds and 5 assists in that game. His assist numbers are higher thus far this season, but more importantly, it's been his assertiveness. He looked very comfortable carrying a bigger chunk of the scoring load, which is one of the things we looked for last season. But you know, something the Pacers will need from him this season is being able to take control of the game in dire moments like he did against New Orleans when they were down.
Well, that's right, JP, and we mentioned it earlier, but Paul has got to be that player that can take over a game at any time. The Pacers need him in that role. They wanted Danny Granger to get in that role a few years ago, but he just could never really turn the corner and hit the big shot when we needed it in clutch time. And Paul has really started to turn into that guy, doing what he needs to do in the off season, working on his shot, working on his free throws, working on his defense, doing whatever he had to do, and getting the job done so that the Pacers could be a better team. And he's really helped the squad this year.
Obviously, he's definitely going to be a player to watch for this season, as he has been with every season for this Pacers drafted him. But, you know, you mentioned Danny Granger there. Let's go back to that for a moment. Danny Granger, you know, missed all of last season, tried to make it go, still couldn't get his knee to where it needed to be, ended up taking the season out, just like, you know, kind of like a Derrick Rose did last year. Had to go overseas to get that knee worked on. And then he comes into this league, this season, supposedly ready to go, and then he hurts the ankle. Do you think we'll ever see Danny Granger become the caliber of player he used to be? Obviously, the team needs him to. That was one of the bigger question marks coming into this season, was how was Danny Granger going to fit in, and will he be able to fit in?
Well, and that's a good question, JP, because you got guys like Orlando Johnson stepping up and becoming big players. OJ had, 11 points in the Pelicans game, and they were crucial. Other guys like the guy filling in for him, Lance Stephenson's doing a good job. Granger's almost going to be that kind of guy that you call on to be a three-point specialist at this point in his career, because he's getting to the point where if he takes it to the basket, he could, you know, have almost a type of a season ender, because he does tend to get hurt fairly often when he's in those bumping type of situations.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Orlando Johnson. To me, he was also one of the question marks coming into this league, this game. this season, Orlando Johnson, because of the fact that, I mean, he was a second round pick. Obviously, the Pacers saw a lot in him. He had some game time last year. And, you know, I remember coming into this season, Conrad Brunner, who works at 1070, former Pacers.com guy, you know, that was one of the questions that, you know, he has a segment on his Twitter. They ask questions for his blog. So I went ahead and asked him this week, you know, on that that blog, because he'll ask for questions, you know, on Twitter. And I went ahead and asked him, like, where do you see Orlando Johnson fitting in this season? Do you see him getting more minutes? What do you think he'll be able to contribute to this team? And, of course, Conrad's, you know, tweet back on that blog was, if you had asked me this 2 weeks ago, he would have answered with a hearty LOL, maybe even an ROF, but possibly even an LMAO. But here's the thing. Orlando Johnson has made it happen. His shot has looked better. He's making better decisions with the ball. He is okay defensively and is a beast in traffic. And so now our man, Pulp, who, you know, that's what he goes by on Twitter, Orlando Johnson, is definitely in the rotation, at least until Solomon Hill finds a rhythm. So, I mean, I think Orlando Johnson can be a game changer this year coming off the bench for the Pacers. And I don't think you need to see Solomon Hill take that step this year. Let him get some game time in practice, possibly even send him to the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. But I expect to see Orlando Johnson become that rotational player that we expect he can be.
Well, and you're right. And I prefer my OJ with Pulp as well, JP, but that's beside the point. And Bruno's right. He worked in the offseason. He got a little bit of game time last year in the absence of Danny Granger. Lance Stephenson's kind of it's interesting to say this, but Lance Stephenson's kind of helping him learn the NBA because Lance has come a long way himself in the last few years. Pacers, there's another second-round guy. I believe we got him the same year we got Paul George. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Lance has come a long way, looking really good for the Pacers as well. But OJ, back to OJ, he's just he's worked really hard this offseason, done what he needed to do and learned from one of the best, Paul George, and I'm very impressed with the way he's been playing so far this year.
Well, let's take a quick look at what we got coming up on the slate for the Pacers. This week they have four games, including a back-to-back. We'll be interesting to see how this Pacers team responds after the two early victories.
And here's Irving up and over for Tristan Thompson. Big time block. Single.
Rose with it. Rose with the shot.
He scores!
A rainbow from Derrick Rose.
You know, Hansbro, a pretty player. Hansbro underneath, guarded by Diago. You see Meta World Peace come in, commit the foul, and then an arm there. And
as much as that would be a great UFC battle, I don't know if Meta World Peace is the guy to go at.
Tonight, the Cavaliers come into town. They are 1-1 so far on the season. You know, going back to that that little bumper, if you will, you know, I think a lot is spoken of in those bumpers. I mean, I think the Cavaliers, you know, that was a good highlight. I think they'll have a good year. Detroit, I think, will be so-so. I don't see them – I see them possibly, you know, being in the seventh or eighth seed in the playoffs, but I don't think they're that great. You know, Chicago is obviously a top three in the East for sure. And then, of course, you look at the other team that was in that sound bumper who the Pacers play this upcoming week in Toronto. I couldn't even find a highlight for them this year, except so I went to the preseason with the Tyler Hansbrough stare down, my bad, against Meta World Peace, formerly known as Ron Artest. You don't mess with crazy.
Well, that's right, JP. And Tyler Hansbrough, who I prefer to call Hansberger, he's a bumper. He gets in there, he likes to grind. But Ron Artest is not the guy you go at. He's shown that he doesn't care if you're a player or a fan. He can beat the crud out of you. And I'm not sure that Tyler really wants to open that Pandora's box.
Well, if you're listening and you have not seen this, I definitely recommend go to YouTube right now. Just type in Tyler Hansbrough, Meta World Peace. It is one of the funniest clips you will ever see. Tyler Hansbrough, you know, got, you know, we've seen it before.
As Tyler fans. Being Tyler.
Tyler being Tyler, exactly. You know, gets upset because somebody got a little physical with him, even though he gets physical with everybody down low, and did not like it, turned around, and he comes face to face with Ron Artest, who just stares at him with that, "What you gonna do, son?"
That's exactly right, JP, and what are you going to do, Tyler, is the question.
You're going to say my bad and go back to wait for your boys to bring you up.
right. And to Tyler's credit, he didn't really back down. He stood right there, but he, you know, to a lesser man, he may have tried to throw a push, but I don't think he's going to do that against Meta.
Well, let's take a look. Tonight, the Pacers play the Cavaliers coming to town. They're 1-1 so far this season. Notable offseason acquisitions for them include, in my opinion, one of the better ones from the offseason, Jarrett Jack. They also got Earl Clark and then, of course, Andrew Bynum from the 76ers. You know, I think this team is a team that is on the rise, Marcus. They drafted Anthony Bennett, number one overall, which was a surprise, but Cleveland felt he answers a need for them coming in at the forward position. They have a young stud in Kyrie Irving. Tristan Thompson can get can still jump out of the gym. And then you throw in Bynum, who he can get to – if he can get anywhere close to what he was as a Laker, he's going to be a very big-time player for them. And I really think the savvy veteran in Jarrett Jack was one of the best pickups of the offseason. I think this team could be a good team for years, Marcus.
Well, and you're right, JP. They got Kyrie Irving, who is outstanding. I think he's – possibly getting to the point where he could be the best point guard in the league by year's end. And you're right, Jarrett Jack, where if you make him your backup point guard, you got him coming off the bench. That's outstanding for you, as he was a starter last year in, I believe it was New Orleans.
Golden State, yeah. I mean, Golden he played State, for Golden right. State last year. You know, he had a couple 20-point games in the playoffs last year to Jarrett Jack. I think that's a great person from Kyrie Irving to understand a little bit of that, the veteran's mentality, if you will. And I think coming into clutch time, you know, if you can have a backcourt of Kyrie Irving and Jarrett Jack, I think that makes for a great backcourt come clutch time in the fourth quarter.
Well, you're right. And then you got the down low presence of Andrew Bynum, who, if he can stay healthy, can be a great player for you. He can gobble up the rebounds like Hungry Hibbert can do. And that could be a good matchup tonight in that game. Andrew Bynum and Roy Hibbert. Tristan Thompson, who's a young guy who can, like you said, jump out of the gym. He can, if he can become a defensive player, he can be really good for the Cavs. And Anthony Bennett, who, you know, you didn't really hear much about him in college, but he's a good ball player. He's defensive. He's assertive. He is, I would say he's a DeJuan Blair type of player, but a little bit more talented than DeJuan was. And I'm interested to see what they can get out of that young Anthony Bennett. And that really, they got a fairly young roster. Tyler Zeller even coming off the bench.
Well, yeah, you know, and you look at the fact that Mike Brown's obviously back as head coach. They are limiting Bynum's minutes, so he probably won't get the start. I did watch the Bobcats game that they played last night, so they will be coming off of back-to-back, which was a close game down to the wire. But I think Mike Brown at head coach is obviously a good fit. Andrew Bynum, if he does get, you know, gets off that minutes cap, will obviously be big for them. But right now, you still got the veteran Varejao down low with that Tristan Thompson. And Roy's never been good with the smaller center defending him. So I think that will be one of the matchups to watch tonight. Is can Roy Hibbert, whether it's Tristan Thompson or Varejao on him, can he guard them? Can he take them, you know, in the post and be that player that we saw against teams like the Knicks and Miami, taking advantage of the lower center, something he struggled with in his career.
Well, and that's right. It's going to be interesting to see JP what he does with that. But then you go off to Tristan Thompson and
Varejao.
That's right. That's where I'm going at. Varejao, the fro. He's got it flopping, and he can step out. He can shoot the 15-foot jumper every once in a while. But what you really have to see from him, if you're a Cavaliers fan, if you're Dan Snyder, the owner, is he's got to rebound the basketball. They need that inside presence because they don't have a lot of big guys. They've got Kyrie Irving who can score, but he's not going to hit every shot, and sometimes he's got to step out and get that rebound and hit the transition pass and find the right guy to get it to so they can start that break that Mike Brown tends to like to run.
And Mike Brown's a defensive coach, and he's really stressed defense coming into the year with this team. We've talked about seeding. You know, a lot of people obviously, I think, have the Cavaliers making the playoffs this year. I think they might even do a step better than just making the playoffs. I can see them as possibly being as high as a fifth seed, because I don't rate the Knicks that highly. I think the top four, obviously, are, you know, you got Indiana, the Bulls, the Chicago, and then, of course, I think Brooklyn's going to be there at the end just because of the veterans that they have on that team. It'll be interesting. We'll talk about that when we come up against them in the schedule. But I think the Cavaliers can possibly be as high as a number five season seed because I think they're better than the Knicks. They're better than Toronto, in my opinion. Detroit's obviously going to be a playoff team. To me, Milwaukee's a question mark. But I think this Cavaliers team can be as high as a number five seed in the East.
Well, you're right. And after those top four teams, after Indiana, Miami, Chicago, and Brooklyn, it's kind of a crapshoot in the East. You got, you know, the Sixers aren't going to be that good.
Boston's
not going to be that good. Although, you know, Brad Stevens is a great coach. He just doesn't have all the players that he needs.
I don't think much is expected of him this year. I think everyone realizes that the situation that is in Boston and is going to give him a couple of years to get his feet wet before there are any high expectations.
Right, but then, you know, you even go further down the list. We said the Sixers. We said Boston. New Jersey, who hasn't been good in the past, is going to be good again. But or I'm sorry, Brooklyn. They're not New Jersey anymore. New York, I don't put that high. They can be right there with the Cavs. You know, Detroit's not going to be great. There's just not that many good teams in the East this year. So it makes it easier for the bottom level teams to kind of battle it out there, as those top four will really kind of have a stronghold on the 1-4 spots all year. You won't really see that at the bottom. You'll see a lot of position changing.
Well, it'll be interesting seeing where they end up. When the Cavs did play Brooklyn, six players scored double digits for the Cavs in their 98-94 opening win against Brooklyn. Speaking of which, only two teams won on a visiting court in the opener, and the Pacers were one of them, so I think that bodes well. I flipped to this game during the Pacers' halftime against New Orleans, and I saw probably the worst flop I've ever seen. Worse than the LeBron against DJ Augustine flop from the postseason last year. Jason Terry literally flew 4 feet away from Tristan Thompson's butt, who might have grazed just barely against Terry, and he flew back 4 feet, and it was the worst flop I'd ever seen, and yet he got the call. That's one of the things I know the NBA is trying to cut out of the game, so it'll be interesting seeing how that season goes with that.
Well, and certainly Terry will probably get one of those fines that they talk about handing out, and if he doesn't, then we'll see what people say about it, because the NBA is talking, as you said, about cutting down on flops and that kind of thing. If the refs are going to make the calls, it's kind of tough. They really have to make sure that the guys are in defensive position, and that the refs have to make sure that themselves are in good position. Because if they don't get in the right position, they don't have an ability to make the call.
Well, that Cleveland Cavaliers game is tonight at 7. We'll take a look ahead also. Tuesday at 7:30, they'll play the Detroit, who is 1-1 so far this season. You know, we talked about it a little bit ago. I'm not really too sure how I feel about this team, Marcus. They had a very smart basketball player, aside from the techs, and Rasheed Wallace as an assistant coach, which I think he'll be a great coach, in my opinion, because he's so smart when it comes to the game. They signed Josh Smith in the offseason, which gives them a huge lineup, possibly to contend with the big Pacers lineup, because now their front court is going to be Smith at small forward, Drummond at the four, and then Monroe at center. So I think that'll be really interesting, seeing how that front court for Detroit pans out.
Well, and you're right. Jack Smith, a great offseason Josh Smith, a great offseason pickup. I coached a Jack Smith this summer. That's my mistake. Andre Drummond was really coming along at the end of the season last year. And Greg Monroe has just blossomed into a great NBA player, I think. He's He's one of those guys that we're talking
Georgetown
about.
Product, just
Georgetown
like
product, just like Roy Hibbert. He's one of those guys we're talking about. The reason they took the center out of the All-Star game, the five position, is really kind of expanding into a guy that needs to hit that 15-foot jumper and spread the floor for the team. And Monroe is going to be a tough guy for the Pacers to stop. One of the games I got to go to last year and sit close, I got to see the Pacers play the Pistons. And it was, you know, the Pacers handled him pretty well, but Monroe was tough to stop for Roy Hibbert, and even harder to stop for the Pacers' second team, which was at that point Yamahimi.
Chauncey Billups also returns to the Pistons this year. He had 16 points in their opening victory over Washington, which included 4 or 5 from outside. I think he'll add a little bit to this Detroit backcourt, which they've struggled with ever since he left the original time.
Well, and a thing that they have to get out of Chauncey is that Chauncey is going to be a facilitator, a Jason Kidd type player at this point in his career. He's not going to be able to drive the ball to the basket like Deron Williams can. He's not going to really sprint out and start the fast break like he used to, or like a Kyrie Irving might. But he will be able to knock down the jumpers. He will be able to facilitate the offense. Maybe a bit of a defensive liability at this point, where as he used to be one of the better defenders at the point guard position. But Chauncey is, you know, he's Unc, as Jim Rome likes to call him. He's Uncle Chauncey, and he's going to be a key for them if they can be good this year. Chauncey is going to be one of the reasons.
Well, you know, you look at this team, they've gotten bigger in the front court like we talked about, but I just don't think they're particularly deep in the backcourt or the bench, because I think Chauncey adds to that. He's not the player he used to be, so I still see this as a team fighting for a playoff spot, but I would not be surprised if they barely got in with an 8 seed or did not get in at all.
Well, and you're right, JP. We talked about the East being a spot that can be battled, but I don't know if in crunch time if they can beat a Cleveland Cavaliers team, or if they could. They're definitely not going to be able to beat a. I don't think they have a shot at beating the Pacers this upcoming. I believe it's Tuesday, but I just see them being a middle of the road Eastern Conference team that gets some wins, surprises some people by beating. You know, they may beat the Heat once or twice, but I don't see them being a top-tier team this year.
Well, taking a look, coming off of that Tuesday game against Detroit, then the Pacers will play Chicago. Obviously, that's one of the bigger marquee matchups that the Pacers will have had up to this point in the season. Chicago's 1-1 early on in the season. They lost the Heat opening night, and they beat the Knicks also early in the season. That's where you heard the soundbite from, giving credit to TNT on that.
Well, and the Bulls are an interesting team this year. They come off a season where they were in the playoffs, but they weren't that good. And now they got their best player back. Derrick Rose has obviously done some work in the offseason. He always was good, and he might have gotten better. He took a season off. He's a lot of question marks around that. So he's really, I think he's got a chip on his shoulder this year to say, you know what? I took it off because I needed to be healthy, and I wasn't ready to play. And now that I'm ready to play, I'm going to shove it up all your tailpipes and show you guys how this game is supposed to be played.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, that the Bulls are going to be there at the end of the year in the top of the East, contending with the Pacers and the Heat. To me, they didn't look impressive in the opener against the Heat, despite coming off the 8-0 preseason that they had. And, of course, you know, Derrick Rose is back, in case you didn't hear the news, which means you're probably living under a rock this past month. To me, he was lackluster in that first game against the Heat. 12 points, 1 rebound, 4 assists. Did not look like Derrick Rose. He looks to have the explosiveness. He's added a lot. He shot 40% from 3 in the preseason. I think he'll definitely be an added dimension to this Bulls team, which makes them one of the top teams in the East. But I don't see this Bulls team being a true NBA Finals contender this year.
Well, and you're right there, JP. But they are going to be a team that does make it difficult for those top, you know, the Pacers and the Heat, who I think have set themselves out as the top two teams in the East. I don't think Brooklyn's proven anything to anybody yet. They've been all right, but they haven't been overly impressive. But what the Bulls did, what Derrick Rose did against the New York Knicks, coming up with a big shot late, I thought that was very good for his squad and for his confidence to know that, you know, I can still get in there, I can still knock down a couple shots.
And Bulls did have both former Pacer Dante Jones and Mike Dunleavy in the preseason, but they waived Jones earlier. They did draft Tony Snell on the wall. I think this team is stacked in the starters. You look at that starting lineup, you got Butler, Derrick Rose in the backcourt, and then, you know, Luol Deng, Carlos Boozer, and Noah as your starting five. I think that's a great starting lineup. I still think, well, they have one of the best head coaches in the league, which is one of the other reasons why I think they'll be there near the end. But to me, I just don't see anything past the starters on this team. I don't think the bench production is going to be there, that the team will need to have a good postseason run. And no one scares me on that bunch but Taj Gibson, who could be a starter for a lot of other teams.
Well, and JP, I know you said nobody scares you besides him, but I think Jimmy Butler is going to have a breakout year this year. And I'll tell you, you heard it here first, but Jimmy Butler is a solid basketball player. I watched him play at Marquette. Taj Gibson is a great guy. He can come off the bench at a three or a four. But Jimmy Butler is going to be the guy this year. That he's going to be their best. I think he's going to be their best bench player. And I think he's got a shot at maybe not making the All-Star game, but turning some heads this year for the Chicago Bulls.
Well, after the Bulls, the Pacers will play again next Friday. They'll be against Toronto at 7. They're 1-1 all early on the year. We talked about it a little bit earlier. I just don't see this team going anywhere this year. To me, one of the bigger offseason acquisitions for them wasn't even a player. It was GM from Denver. I'm going to really butcher this name. Masai Ujiri, I think is how you pronounce it.
We'll go with that.
From the Denver Nuggets. But, I mean, Denver's continually gotten great talent. I mean, you look at what they did when Carmelo decided he didn't want to be in there. You know, that GM got a heck of a lot for Carmelo and still able to, you know, build a great team with what they had left. And I think he'll have his work cut out for him in Toronto. But to me, he's one of the bigger offseason acquisitions for this team.
Right, and one of the things that they had in Denver that I'm not sure if they can get in Toronto is that fan support. Masai had a big fan base. Denver fans love their teams. The Denver Broncos have one of the loudest stadiums in the NFL. But I don't know if the Toronto market is what people want to go to, so it may be tough for him. But as you said, he does have his work cut out for him this year.
To me, also one of the bigger offseason trades this year involved Toronto. They sent Andre Bargnani to the Knicks for Marcus Camby, Steve Novak, and Quentin Richardson, and 2016 first-round pick. Both Camby and Richardson have since been waived, so they really only got one player still from that, and Novak, and also the pick. They also signed former Pacer Tyler Hansbrough to a multi-year deal. They also signed DJ Augustine. While I think this team can fight for that number 8 seed, I only see them being somewhat competitive, and I don't think even their main player, Rudy Gay, will even be with them by year's end.
Well, and you're right. Rudy Gay is going to be a trade deadline blockbuster right there. Tyler Hansbrough, who is probably going to have to be a starter for them, may not do much this year besides get a couple technical fouls. It's going to be an interesting year for them, but I'll tell you what, Steve Novak, discount and double check, might knock down some big threes for him and may end up being one of their better players.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Tyler never had the mindset. Some players just don't have the mindset to come in off the bench. And I think Tyler Hansbrough was one of those players when he was here with the Pacers. Obviously, he provides that energy, but I think his scoring mentality only comes when he's a starter. For whatever reason, that's just the way he's wired. So I think if he does become a starter in Toronto over Amir Johnson, he could have a good year. Obviously, I don't think he'll ever be a tremendous, tremendous player. I think he'll be a solid player through his NBA career, but I just don't see this team going absolutely anywhere this year. I mean, DeMar DeRozan is a great player. He's not an all-star, in my opinion. He's a star, yes, but he's not an all-star. So, I mean, I just don't see this team going anywhere this year.
Yeah, and you're exactly right, JP. Rudy Gay's their big name. Rudy didn't do much last year. He kind of made him a little bit of a better team, but I think that by year's end, when good sorts out from bad, I think Toronto will be on the lower end.
Well, let's take a look at the segment of the show when we take a look at one of the We'll take a look inside at one of the members of the Indiana Pacers. Eventually, you know, if we want run out of Pacers players, I don't know, maybe we'll talk about something other than the 15 members on the team. Maybe we'll do coaches and personnel, but I'm a little interested to see where this segment goes.
And here's my little secret.
I'm just not the hero type, clearly, with this laundry list of character defects, all the mistakes I made, largely public. Truth is,
tell me!
I killed Mufasa.
I am Iron Man.
And I think for the first Inside Dish segment, we're going to take a look at Chris Copeland. We talked a little bit earlier about Chris and what we think he brings to this team. He's a 6'8 forward out of Colorado. He went undrafted. He's 29 years old. He was a rookie last year at 28. He did play some D-League and a lot of overseas basketball. His career average of 8.7 points per game and 2 rebounds per game. Despite his size, we talked about him being an outside threat that spaces the floor. He was the April 2013 NBA Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month, Belgian League MVP in 2012, and a Dutch League All-Star in 2008. Has yet to see any regular season action in a Pacer uniform, but I think eventually you and I both expect that to change.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that Copeland can bring to the floor is that outside shot. He's long, he's explosive, he's just got to get better on the defensive side.
We talked a little bit about Lance earlier. To me, when Lance first came into the league, he had all the offensive talent in the world, but he was such a liability defensively. I think that's where the Pacers see Copeland this year, and I think they're going to work with him and take him to help him reach the next level of his game defensively, and that'll help him get on the court and see the most minutes.
That's right, and Frank Vogel's a defensive-minded coach. Roy Hibbert's gotten better at defense. Paul George gotten better at defense. Lance Stephenson and all the rest. It's just going to be interesting to see what comes of Chris Copeland this year. We've already seen the Pacers have a very deep bench with C.J. Watson at the one, Orlando Johnson coming off at the two. Once Danny Granger's back and healthy, he'll be coming off at the three. Scola at the four and Mahimi at the five. And then you got the fillers. You got Chris Copeland and a couple others, that Solomon Hill being one of them, that just are very interesting possibilities for the Pacers this year. And I'm interested to see what they do with Chris Copeland this year.
Well, that'll just about do it for our first show. It's certainly been fun for us. We hope to get better at this show as we go along. Pacers Nation was written by me, JP Sinclair, and produced and distributed by Sinclair Multimedia. Voice work done by Carol Sinclair. We are not affiliated with the NBA in any way, shape, or form. Or any of its partners. All audio contents belong to their respective copyright holders, and credit goes to Time Warner, Cable, Sportsnet, ESPN, NBA TV, TNT, and Fox Sports. Make sure you send us all your questions and suggestions for the show, or if you want information on sponsorships for the show, you can send that to pacersnation.podcast@gmail.com. Show notes will be available on our website, which is www.pacersnationpodcast.weebly.com. So that's weebly.com. You can follow us on Twitter individually at Sinclair JP. That is SinclairJP. And also Marcus Fredwell at
M Fredwell with one L.
So that is MFREDWEL. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll see you for our show next week, which will be recorded next Saturday and posted by Sunday. Pacer Nation, stand up and show your gold swagger.